Welcome back. You're listening to No One Is Illegal Radio, a show about the frontline struggles for justice, dignity, and self-determination by migrants, refugees, and Indigenous peoples. We're part of Off the Hour at CKUT 90.3 FM. We're grassroots community radio on the island of Montreal. I'm your host, Robin Maynard. Next up, we'll get some perspective about the security crackdown on activists resisting the Olympics in the unceded territory called British Columbia. To do this, we'll speak with Gord Hill. Gord is an artist and organizer who's been active with the Native Youth Movement and other groups. He's a main contributor to www.no2010.com, as well as Warrior Publications. Gord will be talking about VISU, the Vancouver Integrated Security Unit, and RCMP visits, as well as giving us a picture of what the Olympics resistance is looking like in British Columbia right now. We're talking with Gord Hill on No One Is Illegal Radio. Gord, could you introduce yourself?
My name is Gord Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation. My people's territory is located on North Vancouver Island, and I'm presently living in the downtown east side of Vancouver, organizing against the 2010 Winter Olympics for the last few years.
Okay. Our main focus of the show this month is on Olympics resistance under the name No Olympics on Stolen Native Land. Can you give us a bit of background on to the work going on with the Olympics Resistance Network?
Well, the ORN was established in the spring of 2008, and it was kind of the latest evolution of different coalition building we've been attempting here in the city and the region. So it is a coalition of different grassroots community groups and individuals, and we've organized a number of forums, training, legal, medical, counter-surveillance training, a lot of protests. We've successfully disrupted a lot of the VANOC, the Vancouver Olympic Organizing Committee, their public events, to the extent where we've pretty much driven them off the streets so they don't try to hold their big public ceremonies in the streets here anymore. We've organized speaking tours to go out east and down into the United States to promote the resistance against the Olympics. And we're organizing a convergence in February 2010 here in Vancouver, which will last from February 10th to the 15th. And it'll be comprised of a conference and different days of actions focusing on the main themes surrounding the Olympic Games.
The next question I want to ask you is that a lot of the Olympic propaganda uses traditional Indigenous imagery to sell the face of Canada internationally. What's your opinion on the co-opting of Indigenous imagery to host the Olympics on stolen native land? And what effects do you think the Olympics will have on Indigenous folks in British Columbia and the rest of Turtle Island?
Well, the practice of using and exploiting Indigenous culture goes back. They used the same techniques in the 2000 Sydney Games, where they were exploiting Aboriginal culture in Australia. One thing it does is it tries to promote this image that there's active participation and support from Indigenous peoples for these games, and it's used as a marketing symbol, advertising symbol for the Olympics as well. You can see that with the Inukshuk. I think that's their main goal with that, is to portray Canada and its human rights records and its relationship with Native people as being very positive, so positive, in fact, that you got all these Native groups participating in it. But the reality is, I mean, the VANOC is just, they're throwing out millions and millions of dollars to the band councils around the city who have formed the four host First Nations, which are comprised of the Indian Act band councils, and also like millions of dollars to artists and dance, you know, cultural groups, song and dance type of performers. And so they're just like bringing in all these people who get up on the stage and perform and then are quickly, you know, shown the back door, the exit, to get them out of the area. But I think, you know, a lot of people, a lot of Native people see through it. They've seen the exploitation of their culture before. And even if they participate in these Olympic events, a lot of them leave feeling very disrespected and exploited, because that's what they've, you know, that's what they've experienced there. But I think overall, there's a, you know, not only among Native people, but among a large sectors of the population here, there's very little support for the Olympics. There was a poll came out in October, said that over 70% of BCers think the Olympics are a bad idea, and over 30% support the protests. So I think there's a large element of the population here, including Natives, who think the Olympics are a waste of time, a waste of money, infringing on civil liberties. The one thing about our slogan, No Olympics on Stolen Native Land, is we use it to try to raise the anti-colonial consciousness among the population here and among Indigenous peoples, non-Native people as well, about the colonial history of the province here and how ultimately the BC and federal governments lack legal jurisdiction over these untreated, unsurrendered lands.
The next question I want to ask you is about, you're talking a lot about the repression of civil liberties as well, and I know that the Canadian government has been really repressive of anti-Olympics activists, and CSIS has been visiting activists across the country, including here in Montreal. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience that you had this fall and what this shows about state repression of dissent towards the Olympics in general?
Well, in regards to the overall Olympic security, it's actually the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the RCMP, are the main agency tasked with Olympic security. So they've set up the Vancouver 2010 Integrated Security Unit, which is also referred to as VISU. Within VISU, they coordinate with all the other police, intelligence, and military agencies, including CSIS, Vancouver Police, Canadian Armed Forces, Canadian Coast Guard, Canadian Border Services Agency, and all the other emergency services as well. So RCMP is the main one in charge, and within VISU, they have set up the Joint Intelligence Group, which is tasked with the surveillance, harassment, repression of the anti-Olympic movement. So my experience wasn't with CSIS, although CSIS operatives have been going around trying to interview people, recruit informants, and gain information. But my experience was actually with the RCMP Joint Intelligence Group officers who began coming to my residence and following me around on the streets. And I was actually accosted one evening. I think it was October 22nd. I was walking back to my apartment, and two JIG officers came up and identified themselves and said they wanted to speak to me. And I said, I have nothing to say to you, and I kept on walking. I got up onto Hastings, which is where my apartment building's located, and they followed me down the street until I came across a group of natives walking down the sidewalk, and I went up to them, and I announced that these guys following me were RCMP and that they were harassing me. And the natives immediately began to yell and challenge the police, saying that I had the right to an opinion. And there was two RCMP following me at that point, but then when this little confrontation began, two more police officers showed up. They're all in plain clothes. And then they immediately left the area. The main thing about that was it was just in the 2 weeks before the torch relay was beginning in Victoria. So the pattern was that we had a lot of increased harassment by the RCMP at that time, and it's kind of died off now. It may be sporadic, but it'll probably pick up again in the weeks prior to or before the actual Olympic Games begin. But there have been scores of people out here who've been approached by CSIS and the police, ranging from, you know, from Vancouver here to Victoria to as far north as Prince Rupert, which is located up in the central coast of BC. And then, as you mentioned, Montreal, out in Halifax. So very, very wide net, because the one thing about the Vancouver Integrated Security Unit is that they have a budget of about $1 billion for security. Right now, this past summer, I think we had 400 RCMP JIG officers deployed into the city here. You know, with this kind of massive budget, the high-profile nature of the event, I mean, you know, some of these senior RCMP guys, their careers are going to be made or broken around this Olympic Games. So they're under tremendous pressure. And because of the success of our resistance, they have obviously been tasked with trying to dampen it, blunt it, and ensure that it's not going to be, you know, as strong as it could be. And one thing about the visits that have occurred is, you know, you can just see the pattern. They're trying to separate the less committed members from the movement to scare them out and intimidate them from becoming more involved. And then that leaves your core organizers, and then they're subjected to, surveillance, harassment, and destabilize or undermine their organizing efforts and instill a sense of fear and paranoia among them. So that seems to be the basic strategy they're employing here.
But then you're saying that also in Vancouver, the general population seems pretty supportive, or a lot of the population seems pretty supportive of the resistance activities that are happening. Could you just talk a little more about some of the successes that you guys have had so far? We've already covered on this show the disruption of the torch, but is there anything else that you'd want to just give a little more word to?
Well, the direct action campaign here basically began in 2006 with the blockade of the Sea to Sky Highway expansion that was beginning in Eagle Ridge Bluffs, and it lasted for 3 or 4 weeks until it was dismantled by the West Vancouver Police, and there was about 24 people arrested and charged, including the elder Harriet Nahaney and another a white environmental activist elder, Betty Croswick. So they were arrested and went to court in January, February of 2007. At that time, in February 2007, we had a protest against the unveiling of the countdown clock in downtown Vancouver at the Art Gallery. So we successfully disrupted that. A couple of us got up on the stage and we stole the microphone and denounced the Olympics. And then there was seven people arrested in total. And because it was being broadcast live on all these different TV networks, including CTV, an official sponsor, it gained a high-profile coverage of the anti-Olympic movement. And one reporter said that there was no awareness that there was even opposition to the Olympics until that event. And then after that, the next month, we disrupted a flag illuminating ceremony they were doing at City Hall with the Olympic flags. We went up there, a couple hundred people, and we just shouted down and disrupted all the official program, you know, the politicians and the bands and all this kind of stuff that they had there. And a week before the flag illuminating thing, actually, the huge Olympic flag flying outside City Hall had been stolen. And it was later claimed by the Native Warrior Society, who issued a communique and a photograph posing in front of this huge Olympic flag. Then after that, you know, they really stopped doing their public events there. In 2008, when they ran the Canadian Pacific Spirit Train across the country to promote the Olympics, and it started here in the Vancouver area, but instead of having it in downtown Vancouver, they had it out in Port Moody, which is a suburb. So we still organized, and we got about 75, 80 people out there, and we totally disrupted that event. The politicians were afraid to come out on the stage, saying that we were too close to the setup they had there. And as the train went across the country, of course, it was disrupted and protested at a number of the different cities where it stopped, including it was briefly blockaded in Ontario by a woman who kind of like locked herself down onto the train tracks. So those are some of the main successes we've had. And also with the civil liberties thing. So the policemen were coming out earlier this year saying, oh, there's going to be protest zones and, people are going to be allowed to protest in these little areas. And that caused a huge controversy because people were thinking protest zones. They started to think of the Beijing 2008 Summer Games, which was characterized by a heavy, heavy police state there. So then now the police have backtracked. They say, no, there's not going to be any protest zones. They tried to change the name to safe assembly areas. Then they dropped that as well. And now they're saying, now the police are basically saying Canada is a free speech zone, so, there's not going to be any restrictions like that. Then we had the bylaw amendments here where the city has to change its bylaws to conform to the legal agreements it made with the International Olympic Committee. And one of the most controversial was the bylaw signage amendments, where they were empowering police to enter into residences or business within 24 hours to remove what they call illegal signage. And so a lot of civil liberties groups here were saying, well, this is going to be an infringement on freedom of expression. And some activists launched a lawsuit against it. And now the city and have come out and said, no, it's not going to be targeting political slogans. It's only against corporate competitors and stuff. Of course, we don't really believe them, because they've constantly lied and broken all these promises that they made. So people have a very high level of mistrust for the government and cynicism about the Olympic industry overall. But, we have definitely affected public opinion out here. We've countered their repressive plans in regards to eroding civil liberties and whatnot. So we've definitely had a big impact here, and I think we've raised a lot of people's consciousness and awareness about what these Olympic Games really are, because it's not about human spirit and all that. It's about a multi-billion dollar industry that's backed up by these government corporations, and the pigs are in there like pigs at a trough feeding off their $1 billion security budget. And so other things here, like the Vancouver police, now they've acquired an armored personnel carrier. They're going to have it for the Olympics. They say it's not for the Olympics, but again, of course, we don't believe them. They recently purchased an LRAD, the long-range acoustic device, which is an acoustic weapon. And now they're saying, we're only going to use it as a PA system, which is one of its functions, and they've disabled the acoustic weapon aspect of it. But again, we don't believe them because they're nothing but liars, and they've shown themselves to be liars. So.
Okay, Gordon, yeah, that just about wraps it up. Thanks so much, though, and I really will be following what you guys are doing and wish you good luck through the rest of the resistance until the games happen, I guess.
Okay, great.